Afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and streaming live all over the world from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other in Stockholm on voiceofvashon.org. So you can listen to me no matter where you are in the world by streaming and, of course, also by going on to the archive later on today. Greetings to everyone, all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, and in particular today to all of the women who have served in our armed forces, who are serving now and will serve in the future. And I bring this up because in my notes, I had written myself a note to remind me that we are awaiting the news of who the next commandant of the Coast Guard will be. And then just before I came on the broadcast, when I left Captain's Quarters, I picked up a clip that told me that the Commander-in-Chief, the President, has nominated Admiral Linda Fagan to be the commandant of the Coast Guard. She is to relieve, should she be confirmed, and I would imagine that her confirmation process will not be nearly as flaming as the one that we've just gone through with Judge Jackson. But that should she be confirmed by the Senate, then she will be the first woman to lead any one of our armed forces. I'll have a little bit more to say about Admiral Fagan's nomination a little bit later in the broadcast, but this is news which has just come to me and which I'm passing on to all of Captain Joe's people. The other greetings go to all of the people who have contacted me during the week. Friends from here on the island and friends of family rank in other places in the world, Ron and Laura here on the island and a number of people from other parts of the world have been in touch with your captain. And it has been in particular a great thing for me to be able to get caught up with all of those people. On the binnacle list, a couple of additions and a couple of subtractions. But the subtractions come because the people got, because they got better. And the addition on the binnacle list are two of my grandchildren, Ezra, who fell, and for all of those of us who fall and do damage, Ezra, who is 15, did significant damage to one of his legs. And I saw a photograph. It looked as if his leg had been sawed off and then restitched back together to get him put back together. So, and then my granddaughter Simone now has the virus. So for all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list, may you leave it quickly and may you leave it in the right way, not by crossing your particular bar, because we've had so much sadness in the last several years that sometimes it feels like it's more than we can bear. The book today is an old book, but it's one that I have read a number of times for its ever instructive value, and that is William Shirer's Berlin Diary. It was written before World War II. Shirer was a correspondent in Berlin. And he traces through his diary entries the path of Nazi Germany from the time that Hitler became the chancellor until 1940, when he left Berlin and was transferred. I believe he was transferred to London. And he worked with Murrow. Murrow, of course, is the comes from the Washington State, and he worked with Murrow, I believe, for the rest of the war. The book is instructive because it makes us realize that no matter how much experience we seem to derive over the world, we some basic things we just don't seem to learn very well. And so I am recommending, I'm finishing the book now for, I don't know how many times I have read it, but I'm finishing it now at the point where Shirer is leaving Berlin and taking up his duties elsewhere. And it talks about how the Nazi Germany leadership solidified its hold over Germany in the period of 1933 to 1940. The magazine this week is The Week. It comes from, this time it was mailed from Belgium. Sometimes it's mailed in Sweden, sometimes it's mailed in Belgium. I don't know how they figure that out, but in any case, it came to me, and it has a very interesting article which has some interest to people, wildlife advocates here in the Pacific Northwest. And the article talks about bringing wolves back to Scotland. Wolves went extinct in Scotland in the 1700s. And they are talking about reintroducing wolves back into Scotland, in particular to the Highlands, to help to keep the deer population to a manageable level. This is a familiar story, is it not? And the one of the plans that's being put forward is that they would bring as many as 50 to 90 packs of wolves, so four wolves in a pack, and introduce them to cull the deer population in Scotland. The last sentence of the article says, and I quote it here, the impact on local farmers would have to be appeased before rewilding, using wild as a verb, before rewilding could take place. So I am reminded of the discussions that go on about this in, here in the Pacific Northwest and to the east of us, and that the wildlife authorities in Scotland are also talking about reintroducing wolves to the, in particular, the Highlands. The other article, I always go into the property for sale, and the title of the best properties for this week is called Coastal Properties for Sailors. And I picked one out here that I particularly like, and this is in Cornwall. It is it is called, the name of the place is Mariners. The Brits like to name their properties, especially properties other than right in the city center. So this one is called Mariners. It's on Key Road. It is a grade two 18th century seaside cottage situated high above the waterline on the harbor wall in this picturesque fishing village. The fishing village in Cornwall is Polperro, P-O-L-P-E-R-R-O. It is close to several sailing and yachting clubs, and it goes on to describe what is in the property. Not particularly large, but it is priced at £450,000 sterling. So people who live here in the States probably could. There are some houses here on the island that would sell easily for that, and they could take and buy that property for cash in Cornwall. magazine this week, The Week. And if you're interested in getting The Week, the one I recommend is the one which is published in Europe, not the American version. And you go on to The Week, just type it into a search engine and you'll come up with the website, and you can order it and have it mailed to you just like I do. We need to talk a little bit about Ever Forward, because there's more to it than just the fact that she is hard aground in Craig Hill Reach, the deep water channel going up to the Port of Baltimore. And I wrote a little piece about it this morning on the Coast Guard channel. And in reply to that, the gunner came back to me with an enormous amount of information, many things that I was not aware of, and reminded me of one particular thing, which I'm going to pass on in the form of a suggestion and a warning. So what the gunner told me and told all of us who write for and read and subscribe to the Coast Guard channel is that a decision has been taken to offload her, to take containers off of her in order to lighten her enough that she can be pulled off of that sandbank. And she's far enough outside the channel. She really drove herself up on there. And she's far enough outside the channel that the captain of the port is passing ships up and then down through the reach and up into the Port of Baltimore. And if you take a look at marine traffic, you will be able to see a whole gaggle of ships waiting down south of the Bay Bridge. As a parenthetical insertion, when I was a young lad, and I was indeed a young lad for a very short period of time, years ago, I had a family that I grew up with who were Australian family that I grew up with, and we would go over to Bethany Beach over in Delaware. And in those days, there was no Bay Bridge. You took a ferry across. And if you look carefully, you can see still where the ferry slips are that for the ferry that went back and forth between Annapolis and the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And parenthetical insertion. So the just south of the Bay Bridge is a collection of ships that are waiting to be passed up north to up into the Port of Baltimore. But if you take a look at marine traffic, you'll see that clustered around her are the two dredges, which are clamshell dredges rather than suction dredges. I don't understand why they are persisting in using those. But then I am not her salvage master. So he's a very skilled and a very experienced professional at that business, and I have to be confident that he knows what he's doing. So the decision has been taken to start to offload her, which means that they are going to put barges alongside with cranes, and they're going to put barges alongside to accept the containers, and then they're going to move those containers from Ever Forward over to some place where they can be then moved on to their destinations. Gunner tells me that because of the way that these ships are configured, that and the way the cranes are configured, these are not the cranes that are used in a port to offload a container ship. These are ships, cranes that will be put onto the barges, and then it's possible or even probable that they'll only be able to lift off one container at a time. That means that this is going to be a long, long process. So, but if they had started it a lot earlier and made this decision a lot earlier, maybe she would be off the bottom. But they had to try all of these other things first. The warning part comes from this, and this, again, I am indebted to the gunner for telling me this, because this is something that I would not have picked up until much later in the process. The Longshoremen's Union contract expires in the end of June. I'm just looking here at my notes to make sure that I've got it right. And when that happens, then they start negotiating, if they haven't already begun, negotiating a new contract. If there is no contract with the ILWU, the Longshoremen's Union, then they will either not work at all or they will work much slower. And so the effect that this will have on Baltimore, Baltimore is a railhead port just like we are. It's a long way from Baltimore out to the open Atlantic Ocean, just as it is over 100 nautical miles from Elliott Bay, from the port of Seattle, out to the open Pacific Ocean. And for the same reasons, Baltimore is a railhead port. It was constructed when the rails were built. Baltimore was and remains today one of the railhead cities. Just the same is true with the port of Seattle. So ships that are alongside the container port in the port of Baltimore will certainly be unloaded much more slowly. And what this is going to do is to clog up the chain of not command, but the chain of supply, which means that maybe everybody is going to be missing those things that come in and go out of those containers, which means that I will be looking at my stores, the prudent captain husbands his stores for the long voyage, one of my favorite expressions, along with the good general makes sure that his men and horses are fed before himself. And the third one is the captain shall show no fear. So all of these things that affect the chain of supply from the origin of the product or the commodity to where it finally ends up on the shelves of a grocery store in, let us say, Walla Walla, Washington, is going to probably slow down. So one might want to not become a hoarder. One might want to replenish those stores which are of particular delight. Make sure that you have plenty of coffee. Make sure that you have plenty of those most important substances like dishwasher soap. My dishwasher is in, by the way, and it's working pretty well. I'm not quite familiar with it yet. So the warning is that maybe within the middle or the end of the summer that things will clog up again, and I am most grateful to the gunner for sending me the information about that and other information about how long it takes and the way the cranes will be rigged, things like that, about which he's expert and I am not. In my post the other day, I got a flyer from the Neptune Society. Now, the Neptune Society is, as they say, America's most trusted cremation services. And it is connected with the Veterans of Foreign Wars. It is one of the services where if you are a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, of which I am a life member, and so I keep getting these mailings from the Neptune Society. So this particular flyer was on a really nice card, and it is proclaiming that I can have a free lunch right here on the magical Isle of Vashon in the Hardware Store restaurant on Monday, the 11th of April, and Thursday on the 14th of April. Join us for a free informational luncheon to learn how pre-planning cremation will benefit you and your loved ones. Well, I make no judgment about that one way or the other, but I am intrigued by this particular flyer because right next to it is a little sidebar. And the sidebar says, attend a seminar for your chance to win an entertainment package for two. Now, the eyes must close to contemplate what an entertainment package for two could possibly be by the Neptune Society, America's most trusted cremation services. And I leave it for everybody to meditate on that And if anybody has an idea or a thought, you can send me a signal. One of the things that comes out of every war since probably the Civil War here in America are floating mines. These mines are passive in the sense that they lie dormant, usually anchored to the bottom and rise up to not too far below the surface. They usually have contact detonators on them so that when a ship touches one of these detonators, the mine blows up. And at the end of every war which has any nautical or maritime element to it, one of the things that happens is that not all of these mines get swept. And in Korea, we were sweeping mines for quite a while. After World War II, we were sweeping mines all the way up until as much as 10 years after. I recall that going into Tokyo Bay, that there were messages coming out in notice to mariners saying to beware in particular areas or that mines had been sighted, had been destroyed. So the same thing is happening right now in the Black Sea. And the word is going out through various notice to mariners that the stray mines have been found in the Black Sea. They are, of course, destroyed by shooting into them as soon as they are located, but they remain a danger for shipping in the Black Sea and that end of the Mediterranean. I bring that up because, again, as in the William Shirer story that I related earlier, we seem to repeat all of these things over and over again. After the First World War, they were cleaning up mines for a long time. We've used mines and mine fields for over a century, and they continue today to be a particularly insidious, lying doggo kind of warfare. One of the training exercises that we all go through when we go to the various training commands is there's a simulated minefield set up in the approaches to wherever the training facility is. For me, it was Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And I had one, two, three ships that I went to Guantanamo Bay with. And there was a simulated minefield laid out on the charts, and you had to take the ship through the minefield using traditional navigational skills. And so there are still minefields in the world, and the mine warfare is still being used. And we are still building mine hunters, mine sweepers, and mine layers even today. We talked a little bit about the Red Hill facility in Hawaii. Red Hill is that part of the island of Oahu, just toward the ocean, just below Tripler, the big pink building up on the back of Oahu when you come in from the south. And just below that is Red Hill. That's where the Coast Guard has its housing facility. And also the Navy had a huge fuel storage facility there, which was built in World War II. About maybe as much as a year ago, it started to leak. And some of the fuel got into the water supply for, in particular, Navy and, I believe, housing at Hickam Air Force Base. So the situation has gone on and on and on. And finally, the Department of Defense decided to close Red Hill. So the most recent development is the commanding officer of the command, which included the Red Hill facility, has been fired. And the reason given was a lack of confidence in his ability to command and to lead, which is code, which is military vocabulary for you did a bad job and you're being relieved. What is my question is why it took so long to get him out of there and get somebody else in. Talking briefly about Admiral Fagan, who is going to be the new commandant. She is not a sailor, although she did when she graduated the academy. She did her first year, 2 years out of the academy as a deck watch officer in Polar Star. Other than that, she has been an internationalist. She is in. She has represented the United States in the International Maritime Organization and a number of other international organizations. I always lust in my black captain's soul for a commandant who wears either the cutterman's insignia, which I wear, or the wings of gold, which brown shoes wear, aviators, with extensive operational experience in command at sea. I always have to believe, though, that a careful vetting process and selection process is gone through before a recommendation is made to the commander-in-chief so that he can then make the nomination to the Senate. I wish Admiral Fagan and all of us who wear the shield, all of us who are Captain Joe's people who are Coast Guard people, and all of Captain Joe's people who may not be Coast Guard people but who share the values that we, those of us who wear the shield, do. And so I am going to be very interested in her confirmation hearings, and I look forward to all of the information that will come out as we go through the confirmation hearings. There's one thing about the Ever Forward. She's the largest ship that has ever grounded in Chesapeake Bay. But I am reminded that right after World War II, the USS Missouri ran aground down near the Virginia Capes. And if you are interested in naval history, you could look her up under, just type in USS Missouri grounding, and you will come up with the story. It took a long time and a lot of dredging and a lot of pulling and hauling to get her off as well. The Shackleton's Endurance remains at the bottom of the Weddell Sea, and may she lay there for into eternity, and that there not be any effort to circumvent the Antarctic Treaty to bring her up. I've had some requests for more information about this, and so I am working on getting a friend who is a admiralty lawyer to come and talk about the laws of salvage, which might apply to her if she was not protected by the Antarctic Treaty, and also to talk about general average. General average is the part of maritime law which says that the all of the people that have a cargo in this case Ever Forward, are now going to share in the costs of refloating her. And I want to get somebody in who is an expert on that sort of thing to talk about it with all of us, and also to talk about the laws of salvage so that we can be sure that Endurance will remain where she is right now, down on the bottom of the Weddell Sea. I think I mentioned once before, but it's worth bringing up because I think it's a great story. Polar Star is returning from Antarctica, and she, in the meantime, has been growing food in her hangar, and she's got these vertical hydroponic gardens. And I think I will make a trip down there to have a look at her and see these gardens growing amidst the helicopter spare parts, the spare engines, the spare rotors, and all of the other things that go with that. We've come now to the end of my time, and Captain O'Brien just walked in, and he tells me that the labor actions going on with Alaska Airlines are informational only and that they will no doubt be returning to full duty very, very shortly. And with that, it remains then for me to say that this is your Captain Joe, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly for all of you who are responsible and accountable for other people. You know where your duty lies. Watch their six. Take good care of them, because we have the summer coming. The Vashon Presbyterian Church right across the street, the sign says, "Make the world nicer today." I hope that this broadcast has helped to make your world just a little bit nicer today. The fact that you are out there listening to me every week makes my day, makes my world and my day nicer as well. So with that, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.